You're auditioning for the other 31 teams. You make sure you do your job because you're on film, and those teams know if there's good players out there. And that's what happened with me. I got cut by Cleveland, and next you know, I was in Dallas.
I hate Dallas.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sell or Die podcast, the global premier personal development and sales podcast on the planet. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling and my newest book, The Sales Manifesto.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, author of Sales in a New York Minute. We are interviewing leaders in business, sales, and personal development to give you the strategies it takes to make more sales and make more money.
Strategies that you can take out into the street and turn into money 1 minute after you hear them.
In a manifesto moment?
Well, no, more like in a New York Minute.
Oh, then. Thank you to all the diehards out there supporting us with listens and five-star reviews, reviews like this one.
Be a star on Sell or Die. Leave your own review. Come on. Go to your computer right now. Go to iTunes right now and write down, type down, talk down exactly how you feel about this podcast and how it might affect others.
All right. I want you to enjoy today's show, take notes, and tell us what you think on our Sell or Die Hard official Facebook group.
Diehards, welcome to this interview with J.J. Burden, former NFL wide receiver, but a skinny guy and didn't weigh a whole lot. But he is, more importantly, the author of When Opportunity Knocks, 8 Surefire Ways to Take Advantage. We're going to talk about that today. But before we get started in the meat of the interview, I want to know, because this is something that I'm very fortunate to know a lot of athletes. And some of them know and some of them don't know. When did you know that it was time to retire from football?
Well, my ninth year was the year I retired, but it wasn't so much that I knew it was time to retire. It was that I wanted to retire.
Got it.
I mean, I was fortunate enough to play 9 years, and I thought, I'm relatively healthy. I've saved some money. Let's move on. So I walked away from the game.
I can tell you that, and this is just an aside, I was a big professional wrestling fan. Growing up, I mean, I knew everybody, every name, went to matches all the time. And fast forward to about a decade after I moved to Charlotte, I got to meet Nikita Koloff, who was the Russian nightmare in the Northeast. He wrestled Ric Flair 1,000 times, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we became very close friends. He's our house guest now. He retired a very wealthy guy, and because he saved every nickel. I refer to him as the best example of cheap bastard I've ever met. But he's a minister now. But when he comes east, he stays at our home. He's here like about a week a month. Mm-hmm. And most of the people who wrestle are still wrestling for $200 a shot because they need the money. Mm-hmm. And when you retire, the question is, do you retire with money or do you retire because you're hurt?
Mm.
And a lot of guys are hurt and they keep playing. Well, one more year, you know, whatever the deal is, because I you know, extend my contract, la-di-da. Or they retire and they're broke. What do you think the stimulus is there? Why do you think people don't save their money for a rainy day or that, you know, they'll claim their manager screwed them out of a bunch of money? I mean, come on. You can't be that stupid that you know what I mean?
Yeah. A lot of them, one, don't have good people around them advising them. Mm-hmm. You know, they have people who might have ulterior motives that are around them instead of having someone who, you know, who's there looking out for their better interests, you know, someone who can advise them correctly.
Right.
My third year in the NFL, fifth year, I met a guy in the financial industry and I started working with him from day one. So I always had someone in my ear advising me along the way. I didn't understand when I see guys with five cars and four homes and flying all over the place. And I'm like, this is not going to last forever. You need to start saving this stuff up so that you have something when the career is over. But a lot of these guys have the mentality that it's just going to keep coming and keep coming in.
I'm friends with Dave Winfield, one of the nicest human beings on the planet. Literally, he's just the epitome of what you would hope an athlete would be.
Right.
It says, well, what do you do after retirement? Well, here's what I think that's a misnomer. You just retire from sports. You don't retire from life.
Right.
You go into business, you do something. So you had a transition. Was it an easy one for you?
It was. And I don't want to sound like cocky or overconfident.
Come on, do it.
Because I was always planning for life after football because Jeffrey, I didn't expect to play. And then when I made it, I thought, let's see, a vested player retires for qualifies for retirement year four. Let's see if we can play 4 years. Then it was year five, year six. By the time I got to nine, I had made so many contacts in the business world and had other interests that I was ready to make the transition where I really did go into something else. So unlike a lot of players, I mean, I had that plan B ready to go.
Why do you think other players don't have that?
I think one reason why is because I never expected to be there. So it was such a privilege for me to be there. I didn't feel I was bigger than the game. I felt honored to be there. So I cherish every single day. A lot of players are groomed to play in the NFL. It's been planted in their brain from infancy. You're going to be a professional athlete. So there's a different mentality. And when they get there, they think they're bigger than the game. And it's reflected in the way that they live.
Or the way they act.
Exactly.
And some guys make it and they're still assholes. And I'm not going to mention any names because it wouldn't be fair to Deion Sanders. but the challenge that you have is, can you be a nice person in society and be respected rather than revered?
Yeah. And I think, well, you should be. I mean, a lot of that has to do with how you're raised. I mean, I was raised by a single parent mom who dropped out of high school when she was a junior, but she instilled morals and principles in me, basic ones, you know, how you treat people. So when I got to the NFL, I always thought, just because I'm in the NFL does not make me better than anybody else. Treat people the way you want to be treated. And that was my approach. Other players, it was a little different. And to be honest, it was such a turnoff when I would see how players would treat, you know, fans and outsiders.
Yep. Exactly. And I think that's a true mark of who they are personality-wise.
Absolutely.
You know, just take a little time and be grateful for who they are and what they're doing for you. Because if it wasn't for fans, there wouldn't be any teams.
Montana takes the snap. Back in the pocket, five-step drop. Looking for the end zone. J.J. Burton, touchdown! 9 yards deep in the end zone. And the Chiefs are within a digit.
And you played for Joe Montana. He was your quarterback for a couple of 1 year, 2 years?
Yeah, 2 years.
What do you think? And that, arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, correct?
Correct.
Why do you think he went to Kansas City? Why didn't he end his career with San Francisco?
Well, he had a chip on his shoulder. I mean, he definitely felt he could still play. And from what he shared with us, the 49ers were trying to move him out of there and get young in there because they thought Joe didn't have it anymore. So when you have that motivation to prove somebody wrong, then obviously you're going to try to put yourself in a position to do that. We were fortunate enough that it was the Kansas City Chiefs. And I'll tell you, Jeffrey, I remember I was on vacation and I read the newspaper. I was on a boat. We were taking a cruise and I read the newspaper. Joe Montana's coming to Kansas City. I was like, get out of here. No way. But when Joe walked into the meeting room, it was like, wow, Joe's on our team. This is cool.
He's Jesus of quarterbacks, correct?
Yeah, it was one of those, that's Joe Montana. You know, I mean, I used to watch him when I was in the eighth grade. Now he's going to throw passes to me.
So what'd you learn from him? Is there anything special that you learned from Joe Montana?
Absolutely. Because there was two approaches I took. This is Joe. He's the greatest. Okay, wait a minute. Success leaves clues. What can I learn from him? And there was a couple of things that I took away right away. One was his preparation. You know, he played, he was already had won four Super Bowls up to that point. But when he came to KC, we used to say he studied like a rookie, he prepared like a veteran, and he led like a pro. I mean, he was so hungry for success. So he was always studying. So his preparation was like next level. And then he had that attitude of, you know, I'm not going to get complacent. I'm not going to rest on my laurels. I don't care what I've done in the past. How can I get better every single day? And it was reflected in every aspect of his game. And then lastly, I'd say it didn't matter how many times he got hit, no matter what was happening in the game, Joe would never quit. He was resilient. And when you're fourth quarter and it's 2 minutes left and you're trying to win the game and you look in the huddle and you got a guy that's been there, done that, that leadership was contagious. And that first year, he led us right to the AFC Championship game.
And keep in mind that you were a forerunner for the wideout that became Wes Welker, you know, the guy that could run underneath the coverage or behind the coverage and catch the ball. The key is catching the ball, not having the ball thrown at you. That's bullshit. Catching the ball. That's everything. It's all about your hands. It's not about your ability to get open. Getting open is like a given. That's what you're supposed to do. Then the ball comes out. And Joe Montana did not throw soft.
No, he didn't. He didn't throw tight either. It kind of moved a little bit, but he threw it early. So right away, I had to learn to get my head around faster and look for the ball because he didn't throw it when you were open. He threw it way before you were open.
Yeah, it's the Wayne Gretzky approach. Go where you're going, where the puck's going to go, not where the puck is.
Yeah, and you can always tell the quarterbacks today that are good at that and the quarterbacks today who struggle with that.
That's true. That's why you're going to watch this year as Carson Wentz wins another Super Bowl for the Philadelphia Eagles, but that's just a prediction. Tell me about other guys that you met along the way that had the same kind of preparation and drive. Were there any other guys in the league that you knew that were the same kind of person?
At that level, let's see, Kansas City or Cleveland, I'd say no. I was in Dallas in 89. Aikman was a rookie, so he wasn't there yet. Atlanta, the 2 years. No, I mean, Joe was kind of a unique at that age. I just never saw someone with his level of success and the effort he put in to win on Sunday. Now you kind of see it. You see the Bradys. You see the
Drew Brees.
It's kind of normal now for the elite athlete to do that. But back then, I think Joe was kind of rare.
I think that for me, watching games, I respected John Elway for what he did. Mm-hmm. I certainly respected Peyton Manning for what he did. I think Eli Manning's the luckiest quarterback in the history of mankind, but only because I'm an Eagles fan. But the challenge is for any diehard out there, if you're a sales guy and you're looking to make the sale, you have to look at the preparation and the determination and the drive of the people that are doing it for millions and millions of dollars and giving a shit. Mm-hmm. And still being nice people. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, you could be Barry Bonds or you could be Peyton Manning.
Right.
As the king of sales, I meet a lot of salespeople. And one major complaint that I have heard more now than ever is that selling has stopped being fun. You dread going on a sales call with a lead instead of feeling excited about it. You expect the worst when you see an email from one of your prospects or customers. And instead of feeling pumped about your product, you can't wait to get in the car and drive home. Is that you? Let's get rid of self-blame for just a second. It wasn't your fault that there's a myth that successful salespeople are born, not made. If your career in sales has stopped being fun, then you are responsible for redefining what that career looks like to you. You have to decide what you want to be and how you want to get there. I'm just offering you the tools to make it better and to make it happen. So why not try my 7-figure sales formula? I'm inviting you to give it a shot and make it count in your bank. Go to cgittimer.com, cegittimer.com, and I'll see you in September.
I had the privilege of playing 9 years in the NFL. And the thing that I'm most proud of as far as my career is the fact that I survived 9 years. Look at me.
I didn't start making excuses. I didn't start complaining. I talked to the doctor and said, "Doc, can I get my speed back? Because my speed was my competitive advantage." And he said, "Yes. If you work hard, you can get your speed back. Matter of fact, if you work really hard, you can come back faster than you were before."
You want to stop improving yourself, improving your abilities in this business. Humility is a very important key of quality in this business. Because once you start thinking you know everything, that's the beginning of your demise.
So you give keynote addresses, right?
Yes.
Tell me about them.
Well, the keynotes, something I've always wanted to do was speak. And I thought I would kind of do coaching and stuff, but I felt, you know, speaking would give me the opportunity to tap into a broader base of, you know, people and really share my message. But I have three keynotes that I do, or four actually. One's called Seizing Your Opportunities, which is kind of based on my book. Just, you know, reminding people that we all have goals and dreams in life. You got to know how to seize and maximize those opportunities. And then my other one is called There Better Be an I and Team, which is really about leadership. Before you can lead a team, you got to be able to lead yourself. And then the other one is Owning the Championship Mindset. That's all about mindset and how you think, because as you know, to achieve anything in life, you got to have your head right. You got to have your mind right. And then lastly, it's Every Day is Game Day, which I give to the younger audience and athletes, because I wanted to show them to be a professional athlete. That's how we have to approach every day. You brought your best every day, not Sunday. And if I can help these young people to understand the importance of doing that, they can achieve some pretty amazing things in their future.
Every Day is Game Day is probably the most accurate statement for a salesperson on the planet. Because if you go into work and you half-ass it on a Tuesday, you ain't going to make any money, number one. Number two, you're not building for the future. You're not, you know, building your pipeline or your, you know, activity for the week. And it's going to reflect in your income. The outcome will determine your income. And diehards, you're getting a lesson right now from a person who has been there, done that, banked the money, and is now helping other people understand how to do that. When you're a former NFL player, there's no way you lucked into your position. Is that fair to say?
You better believe it.
Now, you didn't catch a break because your dad was the coach and that kind of bullshit, correct?
Yeah, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't matter who you know, who's in your network, what family you're born in. You earn it every single day. And if you don't treat it like every day is game day, there's a guy waiting to take your job, waiting for you to mess up.
Yeah, totally. And probably in the preseason, they're hoping you do.
Yeah, they truly are, because it's such a numbers game. You bring in 80 guys or 90 guys into training camp. 53 guys make the roster. They pretty much know who the 45 is. There's about 8 open spots. And so there's no room for error. And sometimes, Jeffrey, you can go in there like I did in Cleveland and have a great camp, outperform everyone, but you don't fit whatever they're looking for at the time, and you still get cut.
That's got a shit.
Yeah, it does. But what I always tell young people is that you're auditioning for the other 31 teams. You make sure you do your job because you're on film, and those teams know if there's good players out there. And that's what happened with me. I got cut by Cleveland, and next you know, I was in Dallas.
I hate Dallas. I don't even like people. I don't even like people that like Dallas.
Well, I hated them in 89 because we were 1-15.
Yeah.
I'm like, when the year was over and Jimmy Johnson says, "We're not bringing you back. We don't think you're going to be able to really play in the NFL." And I said, "Hey, I don't want to be."
Neither here. Can you.
I was like, "You guys are not going to win a Super Bowl." And I leave, and then they win 3 Super Bowls. So
let me throw this at you. That was the year that the Buddy Ryan coached the Eagles, mm-hmm. and it was the year that we beat the crap out of the Dallas Cowboys. There was the Blood Bowl and all the other kind of. Mm-hmm. And after the second beating of Dallas, Buddy Ryan came on television and gave, I think, arguably the best line I've ever heard in sports, when he said, "Someone needs to tell Jimmy Johnson that East Carolina is no longer on the schedule." And
I can hear Buddy saying that.
Oh, totally. Yeah, totally.
DeBerg on first down. 26 seconds to go. Long ball. Man is open. It'll go for six. J.J. Burden.
You left a championship environment in the NFL. Can you transition a championship environment in a business? What do you have to do to create that championship environment on a team of salespeople?
Well, it starts with you. I mean, I think any type of success when you're leading a team, it all starts with you. So I think you got to get your stuff in order first. And what I mean is that you got to go in with the mindset that I'm going to go set the pace for the team. I'm going to be the example, you know, because I don't want anybody questioning my efforts or challenging me. I want them to look at me and see that, man, if JJ's doing this and I need to step up my game. So it starts with whoever's leading the team. And then, you know, the game plan, Jeffrey, has to be crystal clear. All the salespeople have to know what's expected of them. You know, just like in football, we could not perform on Sunday unless we're all on the same page as far as a game plan. So that game plan has to be crystal clear. And then the rules has to be established. And that means that you got to be willing to put in the work. And, you know, one of the terms I talk about a lot is, and this applies to the sales world, is that you've got to have that discipline. And discipline is the ability to do what you need to do when you need to do it while no one is watching. And think about a salesperson. How many times are they by themselves?
You know, most of the time.
Yeah. I mean, and that's how it was for us in the NFL. I didn't need someone reminding me, hey, JJ, study your plays, watch film. No, you do that on your own because it's in your DNA. That's what it takes to be the best. And so that type of message, that type of environment has to be instilled in the sales force because they got to know that they're not always going to be watching. You know, they're not always going to have someone looking over their shoulder. They got to be able to push themselves and do what they need to do when they need to do it.
And that basically is your own personal fortitude and your own integrity.
Yep.
I mean, you can't fake it in the NFL. You might be able to fake it on a college football team because there's 80 people in the squad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for whatever reason, you don't have a good day that Sunday. But in the NFL, you can't afford not to have a good day.
No, no. And you know what, Jeffrey? And that's why one of the things I say, it always starts with your why and your motivation. What's your seat of motivation for what you're doing? I mean, why do you do what you do? Because as you know, if we don't have a strong reason why we're doing something, if I didn't have a strong reason why I was in the NFL, when it got hard, when it got difficult, I would have just quit. No, but what was driving me was, you know, changing my circumstances as a young kid and raised in the hood of Northeast Portland. That was my motivation. But sometimes for salespeople, I always ask them, why do you do what you do? Do you really know the reason? What is the reason? And I just say, keep asking, keep digging, because if you can get to the core and you know why you're doing what you need to do, then there's nothing that should stop you from doing what you need to do when you need to do it.
From your personal story, I think pride from your mom would be a big reason.
Yeah, there was some motivation there. I mean, when you see your mom who became a welder and she's in a man's world doing welding and she's got the big boots and the big coat and, you know, she's carrying the stuff to work and she comes home and she was the first one to really taught me about seizing your opportunities. No matter how hard it is, you do what you got to do. And at an early age, I realized that, oh, if mom can do that, then I certainly could do that as well. But I want something a little better for myself and for my family. I don't want to struggle and how we live. And so there was that extra motivation. And that's why 5'10", 157 pounds playing the NFL, I didn't care how big they were. I didn't care if I had to go over the middle. Whatever it took to keep my job and support my family, I was willing to do it.
But I think that, you know, obviously the challenge for you getting out of the NFL and going into the business world is to be able to transfer the message to other people to where it sticks. So you became a speaker. When did you know you were good at it?
Good question. Well, when I was in Cleveland, my first team, during the offseason, players would have the opportunity to do appearances. They would pay you to go to schools, go speak at communities, organizations. So I thought, I don't like speaking in front of people, but they're going to pay me. Here's a skill I could develop. And so I would, during the offseason, during my career, I would do this. But about 10 years ago, I was at a direct selling event, and I was on stage speaking to like 15,000 people. And I remember when they sent me the video, and I was watching, Jeffrey, and I said, dang, I'm not bad. I'm not real nervous. I'm just up there doing. I thought maybe I can make a career out of this.
Shit, you're already in front of 50,000 people on a Sunday.
I know, but it's different. Your helmet's not on and they can see you. But that was kind of when I realized that, you know, if I got serious, I could really do this. And I found a mentor, Dr. Will Moreland, because I thought, let me find someone who's already had success. He got me started and the rest is history. But I'll tell you this, even though I played in the NFL and I played with Joe and all that, it doesn't matter. You still got to grind. You still get your nose, but it's all those skill sets that I learned from the NFL about showing the grit and stick-to-itiveness. I still have to do it in the speaking world too.
Do you have a signature move or line that you've stuck with for a long time?
Ooh, man, I got a couple of those. I think probably the one that I share a lot in my presentation is about the importance of understanding your why, which I talked about. But I say when your why is strong enough, the process to get there is not a challenge. So when someone tells me there's a roadblock or someone's told them no, or this person won't set up a meeting, whatever. If your reason for doing it is strong enough, the process to get there is not a challenge. You'll figure a way. And let me just tell you, I want to tell you a quick story because a lot of people don't know this. So I went to Oregon on a track scholarship. I didn't get a football scholarship. Too small in high school. So when I went to Oregon, I got a track scholarship and I asked the coaches, I said, hey, one day I want to try out for the football team. So the track coaches say, you come run at Oregon and then we'll see if we can help you walk on. So the second year at Oregon, I started secretly watching the football practices. And after 2 days, I determined I could play college football. I got to get noticed. The third day I stand on the football field during practice. I'm just waiting for the coach to kick me off the field. And Rich Brooks, the head coach, comes down at the end of practice. He says, Burden, I see you out here. What are you doing out here? Coach, I want to play. I want to play Pac-10 football. He's like, man, you're too small. I said, Coach, I can do it. Anyway, I begged him and begged him. He said, come walk on in the fall. Let's see what you got. I went into the fall. First day, 15 wide receivers on that depth chart. I was number 14. Now, most people are thinking, forget it. They're not going to give me a shot. I was like, how fast can I move up the depth chart? Because I knew I had the ability, but they didn't know how bad I really wanted it. Anyway, the point is, 2 weeks later, I became a starter or a backup, and I played 4 years at Oregon. The reason why I like to share that story is because sometimes in life, you have to create opportunities where there appears none exist. I created that opportunity where it appeared it didn't happen. I went on to play 9 years in the NFL. So the message I always tell salespeople is if you're trying to set up that meeting or there's someone you want to work with, you might have to think out of the box or get your foot in the door, but you have to figure out a way to make it happen because you don't know what it could turn into. So whoever thought I'd play 9 years in the NFL because I begged the coach if I could walk on.
Play fake by Montana. Now guns it down the near sideline. He's looking for Burton. He makes the catch at the 5. Touchdown, Kansas City. J.J. Burton.
When opportunity knocks, let's go out with opportunity because there's always an opportunity whenever we play together. And talk to a salesperson about understanding opportunity versus complaining about the fact that there's horse shit all over the barn because the opportunity guy is looking for the pony.
Well, basically, I want to put in any person's, in particular salespeople's mindset that you got to think like opportunities are everywhere. They're everywhere. You know, opportunities for you to achieve your goals, your dreams, whatever the numbers you got to hit. So it starts with your mindset too. You got to have understand that they are everywhere. And it's your ability to recognize, and sometimes you'll see them and sometimes you won't. But one of the things I've learned in life is that when you are focused and you do the work and you put in that discipline, you put in that extra time, like you mentioned, as a wide receiver, it's about catching the ball. Well, I would catch hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of balls mastering that skill set so that I would have more opportunities in the game. And that's the thing salespeople have to understand. What are the skill sets you need to be proficient or more successful at what you do? How much time are you putting in mastering those skills? So that when you do get your opportunity, when you're having that conversation, that you know how to have the right conversation. You know how to find out what that customer or what that potential customer is looking for. You know, what's their why? What's driving them? You know, and having that confidence that you can actually do it. And a lot of times you think too, Jeffrey, it all has to do with people's confidence level because you're going to get your rejections. You're going to get your no's. And how do you deal with those no's? How do you deal with those rejections? Some people shut it down. Some people make excuses. Some people start pointing the fingers. The thing I want them to know is those no's should make you hungrier. They should make you want to work harder. They should make you want to make more calls. I mean, that's what happened to me. As I got no after no in the NFL, it made me work harder. And as a result, more and more doorways started opening up. And so, and understanding too that when you have those great days, those great weeks, those great quarters, when everything's going great, yeah, you can pat yourself on the back, but you cannot get comfortable. You have to keep trying to get better. And every day, kind of have that attitude. How can I be better than I was the day before? Because that's what people do in life naturally. Even in sports, you get a lead in the game. What do you typically do? You kind of back off. You let off instead of doing what Michael Jordan used to do. You probably heard the 0-0 story. You know, everybody asked Michael in a game, what was the score? Michael would say 0-0. Didn't matter if they were 20 points ahead or 10 points behind. It was 0-0 because Michael always wanted to stay in that moment of putting the pressure on his opponents. And that's the same thing salespeople should do. No matter what, it's 0-0. Every day, it's a new day to get better.
The most interesting example in football that I've seen in the last decade was the Atlanta Falcons being 30 up on the Patriots and then playing not to lose. Mm-hmm. Instead of keep on doing it, they could have won by 60. Mm-hmm. But they ended up losing because they played protective D or
– yeah.
And as soon as New England scored the first TD, you knew they were toast.
Yeah. Yeah. It starts with the coach. I mean, he's calling the plays.
They didn't
replace
it. He's still there.
Yeah. I've been around coaches like that. When they get a lead, they protect the lead.
Right.
They play passive. And then I've been around coaches like put the pedal to the metal. Let's put the foot on the throat. Let's keep going. Let's see driving up that score. And there definitely is a difference in those outcomes.
There definitely is. And J.D. Burden has been an amazing guest, you guys. I want you to listen to this twice because there's some hidden gems inside of his wisdom. He's a hard worker, and he got to his career's peak because he worked his ass off, not because he got lucky. Hard work makes luck. Thank you, J.J. We'll look forward to another talk.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Keep up the good information.
Another fantastic episode of Sell or Die is now in the books.
Let's let the listener be the judge of that.
You can be. Subscribe. Rate and review our show today. In fact, right now.
Or if that sounds too complicated, tell a friend.
Tell both your friends.
Because if you're not selling,
you're dying.
We're leaving.
Au revoir.
Shalom.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.